NemosNewsNetwork.com, breaking the cycle of fake news.
Welcome back, my friend, to The Silent War with your host, Dustin Nemos, and I'm joined once again by my friend and returning guest, Dr. Kirk Elliott, PhD economist, and he's going to help us break down what craziness is going on in the markets most recently. I've actually missed a couple of interviews. I've been really busy lately with my own stuff, and I'm happy to have you back on the show, Kirk. Tell us what is going on. I know, first of all, I know that they're spending trillions of dollars. It looks like per week, maybe per month at this point. There's an infrastructure bill coming up. I know that interest rates are getting wonky all over the world. What is going on? And welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's so great to be with you, Dustin. It's super good to be back. But okay, so last week, Chairman of the Fed, Powell, said, all right, everybody, this is my paraphrase of what was said. It's like, we're coming off of COVID, things are starting to open up, and interest rates are going up because we need to slow down the economy because we're afraid of it overheating. Okay, so you can't make this kind of junk up. So that's my paraphrase. You didn't say it exactly like that, but that was the gist of the thing. It's like, okay, what person in their right mind would say the economy is overheating, everybody? This is why interest rates are going up, so we can slow it down, when we've had it shut down for a year? Are you kidding me? It's like, oh my word. So technically though, he's not lying. When you raise interest rates, it's to slow down an overheated economy. That is one reason for interest rate, you know, because the cost of borrowing goes up, so people don't spend as much and it slows down the economy. However, the real answer to the question is, why did interest rates go up? Is because the rest of the world sees us as having unsustainable debt. We added $4.5 trillion to the national debt last year. We've got massive amounts of printing this year. We've still got COVID and things are shut down. And these stores are shut down for good, Dustin. It's not like they're opening up again. In my office building here in Denver, it's like, it's a big 30-story office building, probably 10% occupied, 10%. It's like, oh, this is ridiculous. And you go into the parking garage in downtown Denver, which is always full. It's like premium parking spots. You pay a couple hundred bucks a month for them. The place is like empty. You can just drive through there and you could rollerblade in there if you wanted. I mean, that's just all kinds of empty space. So is the economy overheating? No. So the rising interest rates is actually this. View it as how a junk bond market works. The higher the risk of an investment, the higher reward you have to pay the investors. So the rest of the international world is saying, hey, America, your U.S. treasuries, they kind of stink. You're treating your currency like monopoly money. You have unsustainable debt. You don't have enough revenue to pay it back. So we're going to have to command a higher interest rate if you want us to invest in U.S. Treasury. So the cycle has now turned. And if you look throughout history, and I can go back to 1790 and look at a chart, and on average, 28-year cycles of interest rates going from high to low, and then from low to high, and high to low, and low to high, the average is about 28 years. Well, look where we are. We had the high point in 1983, 18% on a 30-year mortgage, right? Go to now, well, that's like 38 years later. We're definitely pushing the edge of a 28-year average envelope, right? And common sense would tell us it can't go any lower, can only go up from here. So I think the pendulum has shifted. We've now got rising interest rates for quite some time.
Now, I want to ask two questions, because one, there's something new that we've talked about a couple times, relatively new, and that's negative interest rates. And that's kind of being adopted, or at least it has been, throughout parts of the world. Different countries have been pushing this. And that's, you know, welfareism, that's something else entirely. Also, my second question is, what exactly does an overheated economy mean when so many people are out of work, everything else, you know, overheated? I mean, what is that?
Well, overheated is just a lie, is what it is, because it's not overheated. The economy isn't growing so quickly that they need to slow it down. That's what overheating would generally mean, but that's not true. That's them saying, okay, this is the positive spin on rising interest rates, but it's an absolute lie, because they don't want to say, hey, America, we blew it. We had too much debt. The rest of the world doesn't like our U.S. treasuries anymore. So we're going into the realms of junk bond status, which will lead to hyperinflation. I mean, that's probably what he should have said, but he didn't. He said the other side of it, because that doesn't really have a nice feel-good story at the end of it. But that's the ultimate reality of what this could lead to. But here's, Dustin, here's a scarier thing to me. Is state pensions, okay, whether you're a state employee, a teacher, road worker, whatever, you work for college professor, you work for the state, their pension plans on average are highly allocated into bonds, So we've got like this horrible pickle moving forward. So about, I don't know, it was maybe 10, 15 years ago, professor by the name of Jonathan Raw, from Northwestern, did a study on when state pensions were going to go belly up. This is a long time ago. I still reference this because it's so incredibly accurate, because the metrics that were used were, what is their internal rate of return? You know, what are they forecasting, you know, moving forward? How many people are going to be retiring and how many people are going to be coming in to work into the system? Because you can't have a pension fund when you've got a demographic shift in America. Baby boomers are retiring. It's the largest population block in America. They're retiring. So now they're going to get benefits, right? But because of the demographic shift, our fertility rate is coming down in America, just like it is all over the Western world. There's fewer people now working into the system, especially during COVID. Nobody's getting jobs, right? So you've got fewer people paying into the state pension systems with a internal rate of return that isn't being met, with a aged population, the graying of America, the baby boomers, the largest population block in America, are now retiring and going to receive benefits. It's like, oh my word, this is like a 1-2-3 punch that's not good. So like Colorado, for example, their return, actual return in 2020 was minus 0.80. I think the forecast was like 5 or 6%. So now they're not even keeping up with the internal rate of return, which is going to accelerate the demise of state pensions. So let's look at this study, okay? Illinois, forecast about 15 years ago to go belly up in 2018. It did, right? Sure. Connecticut, 2019. Indiana, 2019. New Jersey, 2019. Hawaii, 2020, Louisiana, 2020, Oklahoma, 2020, Colorado, 2022. It's like, oh no, what, you know, I have a lot of friends that are teachers here. So every state is listed here. And I would encourage all of your listeners, viewers, to ask my office for this report. I will send it to them for free. Just get it, you know, we'll have my assistant, Sarah, send it out. I'll get it to you so you can post it, Dustin, because the dates of the states going belly up start in 2018 and end in 2047. That would be Georgia. Sure. But I think there's an acceleration that's going to be happening here, because now the interest rate cycle has changed. There was a paradigm shift. And now, what does that mean? Means the value of the bonds are going to start coming down as interest rates rise. These state pensions are highly allocated into bonds. Not only that, but the ones that do have some stock portfolios, as interest rates rise, people are going to spend less because they're tapped out, which means the stock market's going to come crashing down too. So there is not a very good likelihood that they will reach their internal rate of return that's required for them to stay solvent. This is a problem moving forward. So anybody, here's the solution. You know, here's the solution for people who are saying, that's my retirement. I was expecting I'm getting 75% of my highest salary for the rest of my life. I don't know if that's going to happen in a lot of these places, because once it goes to bankruptcy court, it's up to the bankruptcy judge to determine what you're going to get and what you're not going to get. But if we can roll these things out into a self-directed IRA allocated into gold and silver, boom, you've just won. You've protected everything that you've earned. Now, it's not going to be an annuitized payment moving forward, like some of these are projected to do. But you know what? You can preserve your capital and have it grow, and at least not have something erode because of a demographic shift, because of a change in the interest rate cycle, I mean, this is a big deal to me.
I think that they pitch it in a simpler way. They make it easy for people to get into these retirement funds and such. But gold itself is easier to understand, I think, personally. It's simpler as a system goes. It's a lot simpler than a lot of the stuff that the bank offers. I do, you know, you brought up a question. And of course, gold and silver is the answer. Go to Kirk's website. You can get a link directly there through our sponsorship at nemosnewsnetwork.com/gold. Check out Sovereign Advisors, get the advice you need, get the report. My question is, you know, you brought up Powell. Every time he talks, all I hear is a printer running in the background. At what point, I feel like the government needs their government employees, these state pension funds, to remain loyal and working at the day job, or the whole thing falls apart. So they're going to have to rely on the printer to pay them and to shore up any of the weaknesses that are coming into their major Ponzi schemes, like retirement here, Social Security there, whatever it may be. They're going to keep running that printer. They're not going to officially go bankrupt, even in the worst run states like Illinois and California, New York City mainly, where they're taking money from the rest of the country now effectively through printing and bailing them out. So, you know, the last thing you'd think that's going to really break down will be the government retirement funds. Now, on the other hand of that, when it happens, this is kind of a 2-point question. When it happens, it's probably going to be very quick. It's going to be sort of an epic slide over as the last holdout sort of falls and the illusion sort of lifts, and people even in that sector start to realize, oh, it's worthless and I got to get over here. Am I right thinking that the Fed's going to try to back this up and keep it going as long as they can, just like everything else?
I think that there's a propensity to do that, because you can't have the state's workers be penniless millionaires, right?
Yeah.
But this is kind of what happens. And so this is so the end result to me is kind of the same. So either your pension fund erodes and goes to like nothing, or they inflate their way out of it and they just print and they do all this. Well, that devalues the currency so much that you get into a massive inflationary state. Look at Venezuela. Yep. Same thing is happening in Venezuela right now. They have 1,000,000% inflation per year in Venezuela, 1,000,000%. What does that mean? It means a loaf of bread is basically doubling every hour. That's what 1,000,000% is. So what good is $1 million life insurance policy or this pension if every time you get one paycheck a month, right? Well, it's not going to be indexed for inflation when it's going at 1,000,000% a month a year. So what happens here? And I'm not saying we're going to 1,000,000% a year. I'm saying this is what's happened in Venezuela, but we're going to have something. So every time you get a paycheck, it's worth less. And then the next time you get one, it's worth less because the dollar is being devalued so rapidly. Bottom line is, it basically boils down to the same exact end result. Whether it goes belly up or whether they hyperinflate to get out of it, because it turns into a print or die scenario.
So you're left with two results and a third option, which is sort of your golden ticket to escape. And the first result is you've got $1 million or whatever it is in your savings account, your retirement fund, whatever. It's paying you out a certain amount. You're expecting to live on that the rest of your life. The $1 million stays. They inflate it away. You still have that $1 million value, but you can't buy anything with it because all of the prices went through the roof. The other hand is that the whole thing falls apart. The Ponzi scheme breaks down and it ends up in a judgment situation where you don't get anything, maybe pennies on the dollar if you're lucky. The third option, of course, being gold and silver, which especially gold traditionally does well during a crash. Silver's a little more erratic. And you mentioned Venezuela. I mean, they used to be wealthier than Texans. So Venezuela is a great example, I think, for us to look to.
Venezuela used to be the fourth largest economy in the world because of its oil. Now they're a hyperinflationary third world country, basically run by a communist dictator. And so things change. Normalcy bias, right? Just because it was this way in the past doesn't mean it's going to be this way in the present and in the future. Things change. Policies have consequences. Choices have consequences. Inflating or dying has consequences, but ultimately I think it results in the same end result is like death of a currency, death of your retirement portfolio, unless you hedge against something that will maintain its purchasing power over time, which is what gold and silver does. So you can also hedge inflation with real estate, Dustin, but it's not liquid. To me, liquidity is one of the keys to wealth, which is why I do love gold and silver so much today. If you want to get rid of it, you just call, it's sold. You have funds wired into your account within 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah.
Liquidity is king. I don't care if you've got $2.5 million in Bitcoin or something, right? Well, if you can't get it out because they throttle redemptions and you can only do $2,500 a day coming out, or better yet, you've got a hyperinflation scenario and you've got this property that's worth $10 million and nobody can afford to buy it. What good does it do you? The asset value does you no good unless you can liquidate it and lock in your profits.
You know, at one point, I agree with you about Bitcoin. At one point in my background, for about 10 years, I was a successful investor in real estate. On the private side, I wasn't a real estate agent or anything, mostly multifamily. But, you know, I have a little bit of a perspective, both from like the gold bug side, because I've been following economics since I was a teenager, and from the real estate side. And my opinion on real estate, especially now, is that it is an easy thing to blow a bubble into, just like everything else, like the stock market or anything else. And it's the kind of thing where the government can, through policy, inflate, deflate, create bubbles, implode bubbles, and steal your wealth in other ways. And you know, mortgages, everything else, the death contract, you know, we could get into the cons of real estate. There are some pros, but during a socialist, you know, government, it doesn't, a lot of those pros are wiped out because they're going to try to jack the taxes up, and you don't own it if you don't pay your taxes and everything else. And because of that bubble territory, I don't know if I trust real estate to not lose a bunch of its value the way it did in 08. I don't think gold is going to drop in half or anything like that. I never see myself in a situation if I had, like, I don't have gold, but if I had gold, I would never believe I would be upside down on my gold the way that people ended up with their homes owing more than it was worth. I don't think that's probably going to happen with gold, especially with the printing of trillions of dollars with this socialist regime that we're in.
I don't think it is either, because it maintains the couple of components you need for value. It's small, it's portable, it can be moved back and forth, it's scarce, and it's liquid. That's why I don't think it's ever going to go down. The more money that's created, it's going to have devalued currency chasing a scarce resource, and it's going to continue to go up. This is the kind of conditions that causes gold and silver to thrive, is this exact scenario. And I think it could be the difference between surviving or not surviving in a hyperinflation. Look at Germany during after World War I. See, because you had mentioned earlier in the conversation, what happens when the rest of the world kind of loses confidence in your currency? They just have to print. See, Germany was the big kid on the block. It was like Venezuela, right? Venezuela is the fourth largest economy. At the time, Germany was it. Germany was like the United States of today after World War I. They bombed the living daylights out of the rest of the world. And basically, they did pretty stinking good in World War I, right? Well, Treaty of Versailles said, international treaty, you know, said, hey, you got to repay your war debts. It's like, what? No, we don't. It's over. It's like, too bad, so sad, you got to repay them. Well, we can't afford that. So they abandoned the gold standard on their currency, printed without discretion. People had to be paid in wheelbarrows full of cash twice a day just to feed their babies, so prices didn't double. And this is where it gets precarious, because it was after that hyperinflationary scenario where people couldn't afford to feed their kids or anything that Hitler came to power. And he campaigned on a promise of hope and change. And he said, hey, everybody, vote for me. I will fix this. And how quickly people will give up their freedoms for the sake of peace. And we're starting to see the same thing in America right now. People, because of the chaos and the uncertainty and the turbulence, people are willing to give up their freedoms in exchange for peace. This is exactly what Hitler did after the German Weimar Republic hyperinflation. And it was on a campaign promise. You know, the worst dictator in the history of the world didn't hold a gun to people's heads and say, you better vote for me or else. They willingly voted him in. because things were so bad. They would give away their freedoms in exchange for perceived peace. It wasn't even peace. It was perceived peace. And we're starting to see some of these same trends and same cycles repeat themselves.
You know, you bring up a great risk, and that is the strong man who's going to solve all the problems during a dark time. It could be Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, whoever it may be. We know the policies are going to be the same, and it's going to not help us. But people, as you said, are going to give up their freedoms for it. And I think it's going to be a threat. I think that we're going to probably face that in our lifetimes. I don't know when that occurs or what's going to happen, but you know, I am afraid for the state of the country right now, economically, historically, politically, whatever, culturally. Although I think we're winning the culture war now.
I think we are, but we're already seeing the freedoms erode. We've seen freedom of speech erode. We're starting to see freedom of like the right to own arms erode. We're starting to see religious freedom erode. When it comes to speaking against some of the social issues of the land, you know, they're silencing the clergy. We are starting to see the erosion of our freedoms right underneath our nose. And does anybody do anything about it? Not really yet. I think that time is coming, but not really yet in mass are people really doing anything about it, because they think that there's peace at the end of this road. There's not. At the end of the road is a cliff. It's not peace. And I think that's where we're headed. And so in the meantime, I don't want to advise people ever on an uncertain future outcome, right? I want to advise people on what's right in front of us right now, because that's the guarantee, because it's happening. You don't even have to look. You don't even have to speculate. What is that? Gold and silver going up for strong fundamental reasons. They were last year. None of those fundamental values have changed that caused it to go up. This is why I'm telling people to allocate in, because the fundamentals that caused the growth haven't changed. Now, if any of this stuff happens down the road, it's the icing on the cake and it goes through the roof, right? Just allocate in safety and growth right now. You don't even have to speculate. It's happening. The trend is there. And Dustin, I don't care if the trend lasts for 3 months or 9 months or 2 years or 5 years, it doesn't matter. I don't even care, because if we're allocated into it, we're growing with it. And when it's time to get out, we'll get out and go into something else. My goal is to maximize return and minimize risk for every one of my clients. And this is how you do it. You don't speculate on an unknown future outcome. You look at what's real in front of you right now and allocate into that.
Agreed. And before we close out, you know, I thought this was all coming a lot sooner. I think President Trump and his big economic boom and the faith that he brought as a businessman to the presidency in America, you know, and some of the things that he did, lowering taxes, for example, lowering regulations, I think that stuff actually helped keep the economy going, maybe grow it even, and kick the can down the road a little bit longer. Yeah. But I believe if he had not been president, we would have already gone through whatever it is that we're about to go through economically. And I wonder if now that he is out of office officially, and he's still culturally powerful, but is that going to be what really lets the floodgates loose? I mean, immediately upon taking power, we have dozens of executive orders infringing on the rights, as you mentioned, but also the $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill that, 9 or 10% went into COVID relief, and the rest was wish list items for the Democrats. And then beyond that, what is it, $3 trillion that they're floating for an infrastructure bill? Probably going to be a bunch of solar panels in the way of everything else we're doing.
I'm sure.
Anyway, so, you know, I feel like now is the time to make your decision and get off the fence if people are waiting. I don't see a lot more massive gains in the stock market the way that we saw under President Trump. And if we do see that because of the money printing, I think it's going to come with massive musical chairs, sort of some people win, some people lose. And it's a big thing. And, usually that's we, the people that lose on that game. So, that's my thoughts. I'm going to let you close it out. Any final thoughts you have? And just, again, I appreciate your time breaking down.
The time now is to act and get out of harm's way, right? I mean, you and I went over a bunch of stuff today that showed trends that were right in front of us. We don't have to speculate, Dustin. We're not saying that we think this is going to happen 2 years, 5 years down the road. No, I'm talking about what's right in front of us right now. I agree with you. I don't think the stock market has, its days are numbered. Why? Because what's right in front of us right now? Biden's increased taxes, Biden's increased administrative rulings, you know, that don't even require congressional approval, like EPA standards that will clean for, you know, clean stuff. We all want a clean earth, right? But it's going to hamper productivity. It's going to hamper profitability. Couple that with higher taxes, couple that with higher interest rate cycle. It's like, I don't see the stock market doing very well. So this is what's right in front of us right now. We have to take advantage of these trends so the trends don't take advantage of us. You got my number on your site. Have people call me. Need to act now because the writing is on the wall. And I would rather be a month or 2 months or 3 months early than a day late with what's coming.
That's good advice there, or you know, wisdom at least. Thank you, Dr. Kirk Elliott. I really appreciate you and your time, Kirk. And everyone can find that website link at nemosnewsnetwork.com/gold. It takes you directly to Sovereign Advisors, where you can get a hold of Kirk and his team. Again, I do want to briefly mention that because it's the Joe Biden and the communists and Democrats are in power, there's going to be a lot of solar panels probably being built, because I'm sure they're going to splurge a lot of money on bad infrastructure and bad green projects. And that's probably good for silver. Just an idle thought as we close out here. I'll see you guys on the next one. I hope everyone found this to be of value. Please consider liking, sharing, subscribing. Send this to people that you know that are worried about what may happen, or maybe they're not worried and they should be, and they need to hear this. And you might be able to save them losing their entire life savings or losing some huge amount of time and effort that they put into something. So, you know, be a good friend. Send this video on to your other friends, and we'll see you on the next one.